the sun shine brightly on the royal carriage as it traveled along the road. Inside, the Duke of Calais and his wife, the Duchess, were laughing happily. They were on the way to visit the Crown Prince of Astropol, a country right next to theirs. The lower portion of Astropol was a large mountainous area called the Southern Region. The Crown Prince had built a beautiful road through the Southern Region, and it was upon that road that the Duke and Duchess were traveling. Suddenly, the carriage began to slow down. The Duke called out to the driver, "Thomas, is something wrong?" "Sire, the road is blocked," the driver answered. 11 men on horseback had entered the road just ahead of the carriage, forcing it to stop. One of the men, shorter than the others, but with a mean, leathery face, rode up to the carriage. He was seated on a horse no bigger than a pony. "Get off!" he snarled to the driver. Thomas didn't move. He didn't want to leave the Duke and the Duchess. The small man raised a whip and snapped it at Thomas's hand, wrapping it around his wrist. Then he yanked it toward him, pulling Thomas off the carriage onto the ground. "Stubborn, aren't you?" he said mockingly. The Duke put his head out of the window. "What is the meaning of this?" he demanded. "Ah, the Duke of Calais and the Duchess. I'm so honored to meet you. Please, step out of the carriage." The Duchess tried to keep her husband back. "I'm afraid," she said. The Duke answered calmly, "Come, my dear, keep your head high." The Duke opened the door of the carriage and climbed out, followed by the Duchess. The small man had slid off his horse and stood in front of them. He bowed. "Allow me to introduce myself. My name is Gregor." The Duchess gasped. Gregor the Bandit was known far and wide as the most feared robber in the land. And here he was, standing right in front of them. "I will not hurt you as long as you hand over all your jewels." The Duke hesitated a moment too long. The small man raised his whip. The whip slashed right through the Duke's coat, cutting through to his arm, which started to bleed. "I am an impatient man. Do not keep me waiting." Immediately, the Duke and Duchess gave over all the jewels they had with them and anything else of value. Gregor smiled. "Yes, that's better," he said. Then he motioned to one of his men, who unhooked the horses from the carriage and tied them to his own saddle. "Good, strong horses are hard to find," Gregor said. "I hope you won't mind continuing your journey on foot." Gregor started to walk away.
"Gregor,"
called the Duke. "What do you want?" the bandit answered. "The day will come. You will be brought to justice." Gregor walked back to the Duke. "Look into my face, Duke," he said. "I will never be brought to justice." He climbed back on his horse. "Good day," he called, galloping off with his men behind him. Within hours, news of the robbery reached the Crown Prince of Astropol. He was furious. Gregor was the terror of the Southern Region, attacking and robbing whenever he felt like it. The prince had ordered the governor of the Southern Region, a man named Count Wolfgang, to arrest Gregor. But so far, the governor was not able to do so. The prince called for the royal scribe. "I wish to write a letter to the Count of the Southern Region. Write as I tell you." "To the royal governor, Count Wolfgang, it has come to my attention that the Duke and Duchess of Calais have been attacked on the highway that passes through your region. I have ordered you time and again to find Gregor and arrest him. You have failed to do so. This is my final warning, dear Count. If you cannot stop Gregor, I will replace you with someone who can." The prince sealed the letter with his ring and then turned to his royal messenger. "Take necklace to Wolfgang immediately and stay there until he reads every word. The messenger placed the letter in his leather pouch and left the prince's chambers. As he rode along the highway to the southern region, the messenger began to worry. The governor was a dangerous man with a terrible temper. When he was angry, he would do horrible things to anyone who was standing near him. In fact, he would take long, slow walks outside looking for something mean to do. Mothers would pull their children off the street and lock the doors. Woe to the person who didn't escape in time. "The Count will not be happy with this letter," the messenger thought. "When he reads it, he will be furious. What will he do to me?" When he arrived at the iron gate, a guard let him through. Slowly he walked toward the door of Wolfgang's chambers. The messenger was breathing rapidly. He knocked. A big, burly voice rumbled on the other side of the door. "Enter!" The messenger opened the door and walked in. Seated behind a large, heavy desk was Wolfgang. It was the first time the messenger had ever seen him. He was huge, with a round, bumpy face and small, beady eyes. His hands were as big as cantaloupes. "Sir, I have a message for the Count from the Crown Prince," the messenger said, his voice shaking. Wolfgang held out his hand, and the messenger fumbled for the letter. With a trembling hand, he gave it to the Count. As Wolfgang read through the contents of the letter, his face became dark red. The corners of his mouth bent down, and his eyes flashed with anger. "The prince threatens me," he growled. The messenger watched in amazement as Wolfgang ripped up the parchment into tiny pieces, put them in his mouth, and started to chew. The messenger was terrified. He didn't know what to do. Should he run away? Should he wait to be dismissed? Then he saw Wolfgang's eyes travel to a heavy china dish that lay on his desk. With an evil smile, Wolfgang reached for the dish. The messenger had enough. He turned around and ran out of the room. Wolfgang picked up the dish and threw it at the messenger. It smashed into the door just above his head. A few minutes later, the word was all around town. Wolfgang is out. The streets quickly emptied. Not far from Wolfgang's palace stood a small building. It was the local yeshiva of the town. 15 boys learned there every day in one room. That afternoon, their Rebbe, Rebbe Yochanan, had stayed late to prepare his lesson for the following day. When he finished his work, he rose from his desk, turned out the light, and closed the door of the yeshiva behind him. He walked down the several steps to the sidewalk and looked around him. Strange, the streets were deserted. Where did everybody go? Then, about a block away, Rabbi Yochanan noticed something very unusual. A large man seemed to be dancing, jumping to his left, then to his right. Rabbi Yochanan walked closer to see what was happening, and he froze. This man had chased a small kitten off the sidewalk up to a circular stone wall. There was nowhere else for the kitten to go. The man reached down for a large rock and held it high over his head. "I've got you," he growled. Rabbi Yochanan, who had moved to town just a few weeks before, didn't know that the man before him was Count Wolfgang. He shouted at him. "Sir," he cried. Wolfgang turned, his hand still holding the rock. The kitten ran between his legs and got away. "Sir, is that a way to treat one of God's creations?" Wolfgang looked at the man. His face was like a volcano about to explode. "Who are you?" he burst out. Rabbi Yochanan hesitated. He didn't know what to make of this. "My name is Yochanan Abramowitz. I'm the teacher of the local Jewish school." "Where?" There, Rabbi Yochanan said, pointing to the yeshiva building. Ah, Wolfgang said in a menacing tone. Still holding the rock, he ran to the building. Then he raised the rock high and hurled it against the door. Ha 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 ha! Wolfgang laughed. In his mind, he had just closed down the school. But Rabbi Yochanan had no idea of this. The Rav stood in amazement as Wolfgang walked away. The next day, class began as usual. The sounds of Torah study filled the air. Wolfgang, not quite over the effect of the Crown Prince's letter, was taking another walk. Suddenly, he stopped. What did he hear coming from the school? It was open! He ran down the street, leaped up the steps in one jump, and grabbed the door handles with his two meaty fists. He tore the doors open, splinters and wood chips flying. There he stood, his huge body taking up the entire doorway. The children stopped learning and looked at Wolfgang with terror. Rabbi Yochanan stood up. Wolfgang tilted his head back and roared, "I close their school!" The children's faces went white. Rabbi Yochanan suddenly realized that he'd been dealing with a madman. Wolfgang continued his shouting, "This is a disgrace, studying those worthless books. For shame! This school is closed! Get out!" The children trembled, but they all remained in their seats. Wolfgang was blocking the way. When they didn't move, Wolfgang became even angrier. "Get out!" One of the boys ran to the window and jumped out, spraining his ankle with the fall. It didn't stop him, though, and he ran away as fast as he could. His friends followed him. One by one, they leaped out the window until the room was empty, except for Reb Yochanan. "You," Wolfgang sneered, "how dare you defy me?" Reb Yochanan didn't move. "Guards!" Wolfgang called. Immediately, three soldiers appeared. "Arrest this man and take him to prison. Give him a nice room. He's going to be there a long time." Wolfgang continued, "Then gather all the books in this room and deposit them in my private storehouse. Go house to house as well and collect all the books of the Jews. In 3 weeks, I will celebrate the anniversary of my becoming count with a huge bonfire, and all of the books will be burned. One more thing. The study of the Jewish Torah is hereby forbidden throughout the southern region." Reb Yochanan looked at him in horror. "Take him away," Wolfgang barked at the soldiers. They took hold of Reb Yochanan and led him to the prison. That afternoon, Wolfgang's soldiers burst into the Jewish homes, taking every sefer they could find. Chumashim, Mishnayos, Sidurim. Several people tried to stop the soldiers, and they were thrown down and beaten. The Jewish community was in shock. That evening, the leaders of the Jewish community met in the home of Naftali Adler, the president of the community council. "What shall we do?" they cried. "Rabbi Yochanan is in the dungeon. Our school is closed, and our sfarim have been taken." Naftali's eyes flashed with determination. "We must do tshuva," he said. "We must daven, and we must not stop learning." "I have an idea," Naftali said. "I will learn with the boys in my basement. No one will know. I have a small copy of Mishnah that the soldiers overlooked. We can learn that. So the Torah will remain alive within us." "It's too dangerous," one of the people cried. "It's even more dangerous to go without learning," Reb Naftali answered. "Our souls will die, chas v'shalom." The men agreed to Naftali's plan. The next day, the children gathered in Naftali's home. He took them down the steps to the basement and lit a few candles. The children looked around them. The room was dark and cramped, and they were frightened. Naphtali said, "Children, today we have a new guest in our class. Skipper!" Just then, a beautiful light brown dog bounded down the steps to the basement and ran to Naphtali. "This is Skipper," he said to the boys. "He has some tricks for you. Up, Skipper." He waved his finger upward, and Skipper jumped on his hind legs and started to dance around. The children started to laugh. Then Naphtali put his finger on Skipper's back and whirled it around. Skipper fell to the floor and started to rock back and forth from side to side. Oh, the children were having such a good time. With their spirits lifted, they were now ready to learn. Things went very well for 2 days. But on the third day, just as Naphtali was beginning his class, one of Wolfgang's soldiers walked up to the front door of the house and knocked. Naphtali's wife answered the door. When she saw the soldier, she forced herself not to look scared. "Pretend," she told herself, "pretend like there's nothing wrong." "Yes," she said coolly, "how can I help you?"
"Don't you have manners, lady?" the soldier said. "Don't you invite guests into the house?"
Mrs. Adler said, "Oh, of course, sir, of course. Please, come into the house." The soldier walked inside and looked around carefully. "May I ask what you're looking for?" she said.
"We haven't seen the Jewish boys in the street the last 2 days," he answered. "Count Wolfgang sent me to talk to your husband. Where is he?"
Mrs. Adler stayed calm. "That's an excellent question," she answered. "I've been looking for him myself. I want him to paint the shutters. If you see him, would you please tell him to come home?" The soldier's eyes rested on the door to the basement.
"What's behind that door?"
"The steps which lead down to the basement," she answered.
"I'm going down to take a look," the soldier replied.
"Of course," Mrs. Adler said. She went to the door and opened it. Standing in the doorway, she spoke loud enough for her husband to hear. "Of course, officer. You may go into the basement and look as much as you want." When Naphtali heard his wife's voice, he blew out the candles that lit the basement and whispered everybody should remain quiet. He gently patted Skipper, who also realized that he must not move or bark. As the soldier walked into the landing of the basement steps, Mrs. Adler asked him a question. "Sir, did you ever own a dog?"
"Sure."
"Then perhaps you'll understand. Our dog Skipper has rabies. He's in the basement, waiting to die." When Mrs. Adler mentioned rabies, the soldier hesitated. A dog with that disease could kill a man if he bit him. The soldier didn't want to get close to such a dog.
"Well, let me take a peek," he responded.
Mrs. Adler gave him a candle to light his way, and he started down the steps. Meanwhile, Naphtali understood what his wife intended. He put his finger on Skipper's back and whirled it around and around. Slowly, the soldier walked down the stairs, peering through the darkness. Suddenly, the light of the candle fell upon a large dog. It was lying on its back, rolling from side to side. The soldier quickly ran back up the steps. "Did you see him?" she whispered.
"Yes," said the soldier, a lump in his throat. "It was terrible."
He walked to the front door.
"Poor dog. If I see your husband, I'll tell him that he needs to paint the shutters."
He opened the door and left. Mrs. Adler sank down in a chair.
"Thank you, Hashem," she said.
When he heard the soldier leave, Naphtali came up the stairs into the living room, followed by his students. The boys were shaken very badly. A few of them were crying. Naphtali tried to comfort them as much as he could, but he told the boys not to come back anymore. It was too dangerous. Tears came to Naphtali's eyes as he said goodbye to them. It appeared as if the Torah would be lost. That afternoon, Naftali decided that he needed the quiet and majesty of the deep forest to say Tehillim with all of his heart. He climbed upon his horse and set out for the forest highway. Skipper ran behind him, enjoying the fresh air and woodsy aroma. Deep into the woods, Naftali tied his horse to a tree and began to recite Tehillim by heart. Suddenly, a weasel ran right in front of him and disappeared through the thick bushes on the side of the road. Skipper barked excitedly and chased after the weasel. 30 seconds later, Naftali heard a loud whooshing sound. Afterward, he heard Skipper howling madly. Something terrible had happened. Naftali pushed his way through the thick bushes, running. "I am coming, Skipper," he shouted. Soon, he came onto a frightening sight. Skipper was hanging by his foot, shaking and twisting and squirming from a tree. Naftali pulled a knife from his belt and ran over to the dog. Quickly, he cut Skipper down from the tree, hugging him and petting him. What happened, he wondered. Naftali looked carefully at the tree, and then he understood. Someone had set a trap for a fox. Only Skipper got caught, not the fox. A few minutes later, Skipper had settled down, and Naftali looked around him. An astonishing sight met his eyes. He was standing on a slope which went down into a huge cave. The ceiling of the cave rose 20 feet high, and the front was completely open. Naftali went down the slope and stood in the cave. Amazing, he thought. This cave is right next to the highway, but the trees and the underbrush hide it completely. No one would ever know it's here. Then a thought suddenly occurred to him. "We can learn Torah here," he cried. "I can bring the children to the cave. Wolfgang will never find us. Come on, Skipper, let's tell everybody." Naftali ran up the slope and pushed through the thick bushes. He climbed on his horse and galloped off to inform his students of his wonderful discovery. When he reached town, he went to all of the houses of his students, but the reaction was the same. No one wanted to go. "Please forgive us," the children and their parents said, "but we're scared, Naftali. We don't want to take the chance of being caught again." Dejected, Naftali returned home. That night, he couldn't fall asleep. He tossed and turned. "What will become of us with no Torah in our lives?" At 2 o'clock in the morning, he got up, got dressed. Then he woke up his wife. "Miriam, I'm going to visit Rabbi Yochanan." "What? The Count's soldiers are all over. They will catch you." "His cell is in the back of the prison, facing the woods. If I time it right, I'll have a few minutes to speak with him before the guards come around again." "But why take the chance, Naftali?" "I'm trying to save the children," he answered, "but no one is listening to me. Perhaps they'll listen to Reb Yochanan." Mrs. Adler remained silent. Although she feared for her husband's safety, she knew that he had to go. Naftali took a quill and some parchment, said goodbye to his wife, and slipped out into the darkness.